is between Smith's Gula Tefila of Ma'ariv and of Shacharis. So not going to return to that too much. So there is an important Shiloh Halacha Lamaisa that comes up pretty often, that what's better, Tzatzikin or Tefila B'Tzibur. So this was very Nagei in Rosh HaKolo many a time, and this happens to be a machlokus of a will again in Mishneh Berurah, which is why I was just delayed just now. I was just on the phone with the will, trying to clarify some of our will's position on it, because it is expressed in his sefer here in Am Mordechai, in a piece which I'm going to want to look at in more detail in a few minutes, actually. But here in Siman Hey, in the last Os, so it makes reference to the Bir Halacha's position, Mishneh Berurah's position, that Kriya Shema, that davening Kvasikin is better than Tefillah B'Tzibur, and he has a raya for it. So Rabbi Willig is docha the raya here. He doesn't think that the raya is accurate, but in general there happens to be a running dispute on this point, that he believes that Tefillah B'Tzibur is a greater mila than Vasikin. So that's I was wondering, I called Rav to check if there's a more of a lumnish explanation to it, or just a question of discussion of this raya. So I didn't get that many more details than I had come in with. But this is basically the shayla: what is a greater mila? The Bir Halacha assumes that davening kvasikin is a bigger mila, and he has his raya for it and his position in general. And Rabbi Willig, and I think Rabbi Avi Yosef, if I remember correctly, as well, we're of the position that Tefillah B'Tzibur is a bigger mila. Still seems that it's a good eitzah for somebody who's not going to be able to daven Tefillah B'Tzibur, that since there are poskim who hold that Tefillah Kvasikin is better, then at least it's certainly better than nothing. So if you have the opportunity to daven Kvasikin or just daven Stam B'Yechidus, it seems that if you daven Kvasikin, then you'll at least have those poskim on your side, that what you're doing is greater than Tefillah B'Tzibur. I've also heard it quoted that those who prefer Tefillah Kvasikin and Tefillah B'Tzibur are talking about those who do it as a regular practice. But to do it once in a while, it maybe that Tefillah B'Tzibur is still going to be better than that. Matt, I'm sorry?
That would be better according to all this, to daven Kvasikin and Yechidus, or to daven Shana Shasir is not.
According to, that would be the machlokas. That's the classic case.
No. You have to daven Yechidus. You don't have a choice.
If you have to have, b'shasha tzibur b'spala. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, so you're saying, so the Gemara tells about the mile of b'shasha tzibur.
Right.
So what's a greater mile? It's a deal. I mean, it's a toss up in the sense that it's a coin toss. I mean, it's something to try to figure out. Ishafalpo. Better way to say it, yes.
What's the makar of that filling between people who are just doing it one time and people who develop it?
I'm not sure. I remember. I'm just remembering it vaguely.
To start?
Apparently, assuming that the Maila Vasikin that the Gemara is talking about is not a one-time deal. It's people whose relationship to Akash Baruch Hu is coming from that every day they do it this way. So then that Maila is greater than Tefillah B'Tzibur, but to do it once randomly is not reaching that same Maila. It's going to be a quantitative distinction. The question is, you know, whatever Maila you're getting from this, whatever Maila you're getting from that, so which Maila is greater if you have to choose? So apparently the assumption is that the Maila doesn't come to the same degree when you're not doing it B'Kfius. Again, I think Abbas Yosef has a discussion about this. I did not see it recently. Okay, so this piece I want to come back to in a second, because it's negated to some other things. But as we move on to Yud Amar Aleph, so there are a couple of major philosophical points that come out of our Gemaras in Yud Amar Aleph. First of all, there is a very famous passage here at the top, which is often quoted, Machlokes Bruya and Reb Meir, which we hear about very often. And the Gemara tells us on the top of Daf Yud that Hanav Bar Yoyne Dehavah B'Shavusay the Reb Meir Dehavah Kametzara Leituva. So there were these ruffians, there were these hooligans who lived in the neighborhood of Reb Meir, and they were giving him a very hard time. And Reb Meir used to daven that they should die. Havikabar Rachamei Alayu Ki Heichad Leimusu. So Beruya, his wife, Beruya said, "What are you doing? So how are you interpreting the pasuk and the truth? You have to be a real baldiktuk to understand exactly how their machlokas is concerned, because really it's a little more subtle than it may sound at first glance if you're really holding in grammar. But basically, it refers to the pasuk of Yitamu Chatoyim in Ha'aretz Rishoyim Ad Einam. So the basic question that Breuer was asking Reb Meir is, what are you telling me? You're telling me that the pasuk is saying that the sinners should erase, should be destroyed, there should be no more sinners, and therefore there won't be any more sin in the world? No, we should say that the sins themselves should erase, should disappear. So therefore, it's not a good idea that you should daven for their death. Rather, you should daven that they should do tshuva. And the taket seems like it worked. She was influencing him to this point, and he accepted her advice, and the chariot worked. So this is, in general, a major philosophical point. You know, what should the approach be to people whose behavior is, we'll say, detrimental to society, or detrimental to Torah in general? The question of, are you praying against them, or are you praying for them to repent? Stam is a philosophical issue that underlies this whole debate. But one point that's discussed, if you look at the Marasha here, so one question that underlies it, besides the question of what should you want to happen to such people, and is there a distinction between somebody whose behavior is bad for himself, as opposed to somebody who's a masist, somebody who's encouraging others along the bad path? Does that make a difference? That's one discussion. But besides that, what about just the whole metaphysical mechanics here? The assumption that you're able to pray for somebody else's tshuva. So, and again, this is something the Marshal addresses. Don't we normally assume that Hakol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Meira Shemayim? So what exactly are we asking? Are we asking the Ribbono Shalom to control somebody else's Yira Shemayim? Are we saying that this guy right now doesn't have Yira Shemayim and we want Kadosh Baruch Hu to give it to him? Is that not against our basic belief in the Bechira Chavshis, our basic belief in the way people behave? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this. And Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests that in the Hanami, that that's not really shaykh. But the fact is, people are always going to be influenced by what's going on around them, by what their personal circumstances are. You know, for example, if we're talking about the Ganavim, so it seems like a somewhat liberal approach as far as social policy is concerned, that Rav Moshe writes in this tshuva, that you should pray that they won't have these nisyonis anymore. The nisyonis like Choser Parnasa that he mentions, for example, in this tshuva, a lack of having any type of support from somewhere else that's going to push someone into Gzela. So you should pray that that will change, and the Mela, they'll do tshuva. And again, this is of course a major dispute among social philosophers, whether or not poverty is the cause of crime or other things are the cause of crime. You could debate this point from here to tomorrow, but it's just interesting to note that that is something Rav Moshe Feinstein writes commenting on this Gemara, that when we talk about praying for tshuva, since we don't have the ability to affect somebody's Yirat Shamayim, all we are praying for is that the circumstances around their life, and he mentions Chesed Parnasa, will be such so that tshuva will be more readily available to them and they won't feel pressured into a life of crime. Okay, so that's again, you know, this passage is one that comes up in philosophical discussions all the time, so it's kedai to call our attention to. There is another such one passage, at least one other such passage, on the same Amud. On the bottom of the Amud, in Daf Yud Amud Aleph, so the Gemara talks about the case of Chizkiah and Yeshaya. That Gemara said, Amar of Hamnuna, Maidich Seav Mika Chacham, Mimi Yodea Pesha Dover, Mika Karsh Baruch Hu, Shiyodea Lassos Pshar, Bein Shnei Shadikim, Bein Chizkiyah, L'Shayah. The Karsh Baruch Hu is the one who knows how to work it out, that if you have a conflict between two Tzadikim, between Tzidkiyah and between Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu, so Akash Baruch Hu knows how to work it out, because it was necessary that these two people meet, Chizkiyahu and Yeshaya, and Chizkiyahu Amar Lesi Yeshaya Gabai, etc., etc., and Yeshaya Amar Lesi Chizkiyahu Gabai. And Yeshaya says that Chizkiyah should be the one to come to him. So in general, if you're interested in the halacha lemaaseh, the question of whose covet is greater, the covet of a Navi or the covet of a king, so the Na'im L'Mishpat on this Gemara has a whole discussion about this, and again, when it comes up in your personal life, you should make sure to look there. Look at the Na'im L'Mishpat and Brachas and Daf Yud Amud Aleph, but they seem to be darshaning psukim to this question, whose covet was greater? Was the covet of the king greater, or was the covet of the prophet greater? And if this relates to the point we discussed a few days ago, we said that being Nakdim Shalom is a sign of Anivus, that's the general approach, so, I mean, two people are going to meet anyway, so normally it's the lower one who comes to the higher one, so you're each arguing the other one should come to them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked it out that he made Chizkiyahu sick. Rabbi Kamar says, Ma'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how did HaKadosh Baruch Hu work it out that the meeting is going to happen? Sehevi Yisur Mal Chizkiyahu. And if you Amar Lo Yishayahu, Leich HaBakar Sechola. So Yishayahu had to go to visit the sick person. So that's basically, the Gemara is commenting on the greatness of the Ribbono Shel Olam, who knows how to work out this machlokas. That here you have these two people who aren't getting together because they each are trying to figure out the COVID concerns. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu works it out that there are other reasons why they're going to get together. So that's not the part that is such a major topic of philosophical discussion. It's more what happens when they do meet. So when they do meet, so Yishayahu tells Chizkiyahu that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's big taina on him is that he is not involved in Priya Vivya. He's not having kids. And Chizkiyahu, I keep switching, Chizkiyahu responds, I had a good reason. You had a good reason for not having children. Because Mishum de Chazoy li Baruch HaKodesh, de Nafki Minoy Banin de Lomal. Because I know, through Ruach HaKodesh, that children will come from me that are not good people, that are not going to be upstanding citizens. So here, this key response that Yeshaya says is again a major topic that comes up again and again in philosophical discussion. It's none of your business the secrets of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? The fact that you think that, well, yes, God gave me this mitzvah, but I can tell you, looking into the future, that it's not going to work out well, that's none of your business. Rather, that what you are commanded to do, so you're mechuyev to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to want to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do what he's going to do. So again, this passage is one that often comes up in discussing. It's interesting actually because it's very easily parallels concerns one could have as manazeh about overpopulation and things like that. And there the Gemara really addresses that specific issue and basically lines up word for word. But this basic concern that Chizkiyahu said that I saw through my Ruach HaKodesh that this mitzvah is not going to turn out well, so therefore I decline. So Yishaya says you have no right to do that. It's not our job to figure out the secrets of the Ribbono Shel Olam. In general, there is a discussion, many Rishonim understand that there is a mitzvah saseh min ha-Torah of tamim tiyah m'shem alokecha. The Torah tells us to be perfect with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and say nobody's perfect, but perfect means that your devotion is only to the Ribbono Shel Olam and not to other sources of finding out things. So the Gemara says, you know, it's not appropriate to be chokir ha-sido, it's not appropriate to try to divine the future, or to go to astrologers, to go to people who are going to tell you the future. And that's a violation of Tamim Tiyah M'Shem Melekecha. So many Rishonim understand that to be that that's a literal mitzvah saseh. And there are some, I think, the smack, who bring a raya from this Gemara. Even though this Gemara is not talking about he's going to an astrologer, the Gemara is talking about that he says he's Ruach HaKodesh. Doesn't seem to be as external a source, seems to be it's coming directly from Ribbono Shel Olam, but I think it's more the punchline that he's focused on. That the punchline is, it's not your business what's going to happen, and to use that to try to figure out how you're going to practice your religious belief. Rather, you just listen to a Kaddish Baruch Hu's mitzvahs, and that's your responsibility. So again, the fact that one could have argued there's a difference between Ruach HaKodesh and other things doesn't seem to be the point. The point is that he's focusing on this punchline, that it's not your business to figure out the future and just listen to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do. So Rishonim bring this as a raya that there is this absolute mitzvah say of Tam Tiyah M'Shem Elokech. So Rav Nosson Gishtetner in his Tshuvas says you could ask, he observes you could ask a different point. Not the, again, the distinction between Ruach HaKodesh we won't talk about, but what about the fact that this case is specific, that it's not just that Chizkiyahu was, so to speak, Choker HaSidos, was that he was looking into the future, but he was mevatel a mitzvah because of it. So if he's mevatel a mitzvah, maybe that's when things get bad. But maybe somebody just wants to be choker hasidos stam without neglecting his religious responsibilities. Maybe there is no raya from here that there's anything wrong with that. So to that point, the Nosson Gishtetner cites the comment of Rav Yonasan Eibshitz in the Yaris Tavash, that explains really what the philosophical underpinnings of this discussion are. That basically Chizkiyahu could have said, he could have said to Chizkiyahu, he's got a good point. The Lamaisa, if this is going to cause more damage to the world, if he's going to really have really terrible children, so maybe that it would have been a good argument against his having kids. But the point is that you can't really know that fact. Because even though he somehow saw the future that this was going to happen, the yisod of hashkafa that comes out of Tam Tiyem Hashem Elokecha is that is always changeable. And that's really the issue, especially according to those Rishonim. In general, is a big dispute between the Rambam and other Rishonim. The Rambam believed that all the Yisurim in the Torah about Kishuv and about anything involving all of that, and the concept of astrology and all those things, that's all Hevel Havalim, it's all garbage, and it's all Shtus, and none of it's true, and therefore we're not supposed to follow it because it's all baloney. And most other Rishonim disagreed with this. Most other Rishonim understood that no, it's shayich that these things may be real. It's shayich that these things may have real chachma to them. There's a big Nimuki Yosef about this. And Shuvas Rashba has a lengthy discussion about this. That it's shayich that these things could exist. We can't say that we know they don't exist. But we're told not to use them. That this is not for us. Vilna Gaon Paskins and his Vir Agra, that all the other Rishonim have outvoted the Rambam on this point, and the Rambam is incorrect on this point. So if that's our understanding, so then the word is that maybe these powers exist, but the Yisod of Tam Tiyem Hashem Elokecha is that by sticking with God straight and following the mitzvahs, so it's possible for you to undo what this future may hold from you. So that's basically how we should read this dialogue. That I assume that's based on what way Rav Yonasan Eifshitz understands it and the way Rav Nosson Gestetner is relating it. That's how you should read this interaction between Chizkiyah and Yeshayah. That basically Chizkiyah was saying, I didn't have kids because I looked into the future and I saw that they would turn out bad. So Yeshayah's response is, yeah, you don't really know that. As much as you know that, Akash Baruch Hu has his own plans and you're mechoyev to do your mitzvahs.
Wouldn't that also be related to does go back on the deeper,
right, so in general we have this although that, I think I was thinking about that, but I don't think you have to go that far because that's talking about things that Akash Baruch Hu actually stated, right? So we have Yisod Matz referring to that we believe Akash Baruch Hu says I'm going to do something bad, so he can go back on that the truth is still possible at that point, and therefore we don't hold him to his word. But I think it's a little bit beyond what we're talking about here. We're saying if somebody has some type of external mechanism, whether it be a Jewish mechanism or whether it be a something else, whatever it is, some way of seeing the future, the yisod of the din of Tam Tiyem Shemakach is to believe that that's changeable. So according to the Rambam, the yisod is that it's all garbage anyway. But the majority of Rishonim will say, no, it's not garbage, which is not to mean that the horoscope columns in the National Enquirer are true. It means that in theory there is a chachma of astrology. It could be that nobody you're ever going to come across really knows it, but in theory such a chachma exists. Right. But I'm saying let's take something like astrology, right? Let's take something like that. So the Rambam may tell you it's all baloney, but other Rishonim will say, look, such a thing could exist. Again, it's not to mean that the people you're going to see in the amusement park who's telling you your future and know what they're talking about, but that in theory somebody may have some access to such a chachma, but that's not for us. And therefore, our responsibility is to believe that Torah mitzvahs can undo this. There is a tshuva, which I think Rav Sternbach has a tshuva like this, if I'm not mistaken. And the truth is, it sounds like it makes sense based on what we're saying, although it's hard to imagine that this is something other postmen are really going to be so excited about. But based on this, Rav Sternbach discusses, let's say I want to go to an astrologer to find out what the future holds for me, as a Musar Shmuz. Because if you follow this philosophical argument to its logical end, it could make a lot of sense. Right? That basically, if you're going to go to an astrologer and say, you know, should I move to Eretz Yisrael or not? So then it's wrong to base your decision based on what the astrologer tells you. And that's what the Gemara is telling you not to do. But let's say you want to know, astrologer, tell me what's going to happen. And the astrologer says, well, tomorrow you're going to get hit by a car. So then you're going to say, well, now I know that when I'm left to the winds, when I'm left to the ways of the world by itself, I'd be hit by a car by tomorrow. But since I have the ability to be dovek in Torah mitzvahs, and that will protect me, so now I'm going to be even more inspired to be starker in my Torah mitzvahs, so that I can overcome this fate of being hit by a car. So potentially this could be something that's very inspiring towards Torah mitzvahs. So if that's the whole point, that the whole point is yes, there is some truth to this, but our responsibility is to take the root of Torah mitzvahs and overcome it, so then maybe Davka knowing what the future would hold for you is something that's going to be even more effective towards evoking tshuva. And again, whether most poskim would endorse this idea that yeah, we should all go to astrologers to find out what's going to happen so that we'll be inspired, you could seriously question. But I think Rav Sternbuch has that idea based on this belief that maybe there is something to it, and our belief is that we can overcome it. So maybe, Adrava, the more you know about what it is you're overcoming, the more inspired you'll be. Hi.
How does that idea go with that?
I think that's exactly then what the Rashba has a long truth about this. But I think it's exactly what it means. The Ein Mazel Yisrael. The Mazel is in the world.
Right.
Right. But for the Jews, it's not their way.
Right. So again,
I think this would be a shocking idea to most poskim. I don't think this is necessarily something that if you asked everybody, they would necessarily get behind. But following a certain logic, you could see it, that maybe if the belief is a Mazel Yisrael, and here, you know, we'll give you some shock therapy, let you know what life would be like if we left your life to the Mazel. And you see how things are so scary, so you'll be more inspired to take the system of a Mazel Yisrael, which means Torah mitzvahs instead.
It sounds like
a reflection of the general rationalist approach of the Rambam to kind of minimize any idea that seems to be coming from a
more
supernatural point of view.
Perspective,
so as far as halacha is concerned, the Gra writes that most Rishonim seem to have outweighed the Rambam on this point. Yeah.
But another point here, I guess, would be, and this would work well with Rambam, is that even if this were to happen, that you know, Menashe would be a Rasha, and you know, his kids don't have to deal with that, Menashe could make Tshuva, and Menashe would have, you know, he would have the Bechira to decide whether he wanted to be a Tzaddik or a Rasha.
And therefore,
even that could override any Ruach HaKodesh that would see that he was a Rasha.
I mean, since Hakol B'Dei Shemayim Chutz Mi'Yir Shemayim, like we just mentioned in the previous sugya, so therefore, by definition, this has got to be something that's not...
It's not set in stone.
Could be. I mean, it would go against central Bechira to say that such a thing would be set in stone. Right. To say that you it has to be the case that your kids are going to be bad is in itself a problem. There's two separate philosophical problems. Right? One is using the future to undermine your mitzvah observance, and the other is the belief that somebody's bad character is an unchangeable reality. Could be. So let's look for a second to the other half of that sentence. So let's assume it's like the way this Yaros Vash is going to come out. So what if we take Chizkiah at his word, and what if it had been right? The kids are necessarily going to be bad. Then what? So there is an interesting tshuva that Rav Vosner has. The Rav Vosner was asked, somebody quoted to him a Pnei Aaron, which he didn't have, but I don't have. But allegedly the Pnei Aaron says that if somebody has reason to believe that they're not capable, because of the circumstances, of raising their children in a proper, upstanding way, whatever that means, depending on your definition, so then you're not mechuyev to have more than a son and a daughter. Because reading this Gemara very literally, that we generally assume that there are a couple of concepts that are relevant to having children. On the one hand, there's a pruvu, which is the absolute mitzvah min ha-Torah, which machlokes ve'sil be'sham, we assume it's one boy and one girl. And then there are other concepts from the different Kabbalah, sheves, lo sobera, lo sheves tzara, and l'boker tzuk karmecha, l'erev al tanach yadacha, that there's always an need of having more kids, it's from the different Kabbalah, m'derban, however you want to look at it. But that maker adim and atorah, there's a need to have a son and a daughter, and other inyanim, however you want to interpret them, whether they're also derais, the Kabbalah, whatever it is, to have more children as well. So the Pnei Aaron is quoted again in second hand. The Pnei Aaron is quoted as saying that, look, read this Gemara very literally. What is Yeshaya saying? That which you're mechuyev to do, you have to do. So basically, he's saying, yes, maybe you're right, maybe your kids are not going to be so wonderful. So stick to the Ikar HaDin. The Ikar HaDin is you have to have a son and a daughter. But beyond that, we will be machshav of your assessment that you have to worry about how the kids are going to turn out. And therefore, stick to one son and one daughter. So Rav Ozner himself is not excited about this at all. He doesn't think this raya is at all conclusive. Again, he acknowledges he doesn't have the Panarin to look it up. But he says a number of problems. First of all, the assumption that this Gemara is meant to be read in such a literal way that there's only what you're mechuyev to do, and that we're assuming it's only one son and one daughter. We don't know that. It could easily be that really Puravu is an umbrella term for everything that's related to Puravu, for Sheves and for Laravatan Chedecha and all of that, and this is really a reference to have as many kids as possible. And it's also, regardless of what we just said a few minutes ago, but it's not shaykh for anybody today to have the same level of confidence that Chizkiah had, to say no one's dealing with Ruach HaKodesh. This guy who asked the tshuva, who asked the shayla, was saying that where he lives and how the education is and whatever, he doesn't think it's shaykh that he's going to be able to raise the kids in an upstanding way. So you don't know that that's true. There's so many different elements that go into it. And he's a little bit of Musa Shmuz there because he says the schools aren't good. And your father, right? You think it's the schools chiyuv to mechanech the children? It's the parents chiyuv to mechanech the children? And it's to say that, oh, yeah, it's not possible because we don't have good schools. It's not true. So all of that is discussed in the Shuv again. So all these different passages here have a lot of implications for different points, both for halacha and hashkafah. So it's worth making reference to some of these ideas.
So that means he agrees in principle. He just argues on.
It doesn't necessarily mean he agrees in principle. It means that you have a long way to go before using this as a raya. Because
no, but what you're saying is that the circumstances are not such that you can say only bad. But let's say a person knows that there's a limit what they can psychologically, mentally handle as a parent.
Right. I think that probably does have implications as far as that personal decision is concerned. But that what he's addressing to say that there's a raya from this case for that guy's situation, so he didn't want to go that far. He wouldn't want to accept that. Now, at what point along the spectrum would he stop? And he say, you know, if I really know, like it's not shaykh, I'm going to basically throw this kid to the wolves. Mm-hmm. You know, so then it's very shaykh. He would agree, but that we don't have what point along the line he stops. But as far as taking this gemara and saying, oh, this is the same case as that, so there's a number of problems with that.
There's a mafursha Miriam against him.
Miriam Hanavia?
Yeah. She told her Shabbat to get back together with Yochevan.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Xer against the Zacharim. She said, you come to Zacharim in case.
What?
She said, do what you
want. She says half the kids are going to get killed.
Miriam is basically the same situation. She's saying, you know, whatever you're Chayv and Peruvu, you have to do what you have.
She was saying he had daughters. Don't worry about it. She was saying he had daughters.
But everyone agrees you can't be Yosef Peruvu with just daughters.
No, but he already has a son.
He already had a son, so since he already had a son, so he'll get the daughter, so she'll be even though the other kids won't survive. Interesting, Diak? Okay.
Trusky once mentioned the Tosis in the third paragraph of Basra there. They stopped having children, they wanted to stop having children after the Korban.
Right.
So you mentioned you're in this idea, but I think it's in Aram Muxa's seat, who agreed with it, that, sorry, no, I'm sorry, Rabbi Godly mentioned to Trusky, or Trusky liked it, that he suggested the reason why he wanted to have children was because they couldn't read, they felt without having the mikdash, there was no Torah environment, and therefore they could not be traveling with Kaim Puruvu without mikdash. That was the Havamina.
And so what's the Maskana that it's possible?
The Maskana was, you got to do what you can do, and you have to do your best. But the concept of there being a certain limit on Puruvu based on one's ability to raise the children in a proper Torah environment does exist.
Then the shaila becomes, so then how come, and I'm not going to get into this whole discussion right now, but the shaila becomes, so how come the Sfarim don't say that Puruvu is a chiyah from age 13, like all other mitzvahs? The assumption seems to be that incorporated into the chiyah is some ability to deal with it. So how does that play a role? This is a concept way beyond the scope of our brachas decision, of our brachas discussion. Okay, anyway, moving on. All of this is fodder for discussion. In any case, so what I do want to make some references to now is we've been making scattered references throughout to Birchas Kriya Shema, to the status of Birchas Kriya Shema. And when you get to Yidam Beis, you see a little bit more about that and a little bit more about the idea of losing the brachos, one to lose Zman Tefillah. And other various references, so just in a general sense, just to very quickly observe. So Rabbi Willig has this essay, the same essay which talks about Vasikim, which I said we'll come back to. So Simon Hay, he goes through the different possibilities as to what the status of Birchas Kriyas Shema are, and it's Kedai to read. Again, we're just going to make passing reference to it. So one possibility is that Birchas Kriyas Shema, as we discussed, the position in Rishonim, that it was instituted as a chelek of tefillah itself. That it's not a Birchas HaMitzvah on Kriyas Shema, but it's a section of tefillah that was created to be part of davening and then was connected to Kriyas Shema. There is a position in Rishonim that it actually is a Birchas HaMitzvah, not like the Rashba. And the Yor Zeruah says like this, and the Yor Zeruah uses this as a raya. It happens to be a well-known machlokus Rishonim. The question of, we know there's a din of overlash yasim by brachos, so it's a question whether or not that concept is ma'akev when it comes to Birchas HaMitzvahs. That even though ideally you're going to make the bracha beforehand, so what if you want to make the bracha after? Maisi, you don't make the bracha beforehand, you make the bracha afterwards. Gemara says it only happens when it comes to tefillas ager, because a ger can't make a bracha before the tefillah because he's not chazi yet. Gemara says not fit for the bracha. So, but in general, we insist the bracha should be beforehand, so can they in theory be afterwards? This is the machlokas, the Rambam and the Or Zeruah. And the Or Zeruah's raya is from the bracha of Yotzer Or, which it comes out from the Gemara, so that could be after Kriyas Shema. So therefore, we see from there that the Or Zeruah and others do understand Birchas Kriyas Shema to be a Birchas HaMitzvah. Then there's another possibility that the Birchas Kriyas Shema are not a function of either tefillah or of a mitzvah Kriyas Shema, but are a function of night and day. And the idea being that Yotzer Or is a bracha on the day, and Mariv Aravim is a bracha on the night. And therefore there's manim, or subject, not to tefillah's manim or to Kriyas Shema's manim, but to whatever the hagdara of night and day is. Then there's also the possibility that the, and this apparently is the position of the Meiri, that Berachas Kriyas Shema are basically a merger between Berachas HaMitzvah and Berachas Shevach Vodah. And they contain both elements together. Another possibility is that it depends which bracha we're talking about. This seems to come out of Rabbeinu Yonah and the Ramban as well, that Yotzer Or and Mariv Aravim are Birchas HaShvach, and Ahavas Olam is a Birchas HaMitzvah. And there is also, so to go back to the first possibility for a second, that it's basically a chelik of tefillah, that basically Chazal made this takana to read Kriyas Shema al pi seder habrachos. So this is also probably relevant to another question that Achronim talk about, and there's a lengthy discussion about this in the Kuntres Pnei Yehoshua, in the first piece on mitzvahs Kriyas Shema. In general, the Shailin Rishonim, whether or not to make a bracha on a suffik mitzvah. This is Machlokas Rabbeinu Yonah in the Rif, in a couple of places. The Rush quotes this Machlokas in a few places. And it comes up in Chulin, it comes up in Yevamis. For example, let's say you have an androgynous. If you're going to give a mila for androgynous, so a mila is an androgynous is a suffik zacher, suffik nekeva. So the chi of mila is itself in a suffik. So whether there's a bracha on such a mila is a Machlokas Rishonim. And you see it also with the shechita of a koi or a kvi, however you want to pronounce it. The koi or kvi, who is a suffik chay, a suffik mehemis, is a suffik what the status of, whether the obligation of kisui hadam applies to that animal. And there it's a, again, so that mitzvah is itself a suffik, and it's a machlokas rishonim whether on zabracha on that. So the position of the Rambam, for the most part, usually is that when you have a suffik bracha, so you don't make the bracha. When you have a suffik mitzvah, so there's no bracha. So, but when it comes to Kriyas Shema, so the Rambam Pasuk is that suffik kara Kriyas Shema in Birchaseh. So many Achronim explain, and Rabbi Warman has an essay about, I think it's maybe the first piece in the first Sheres Yosef, or it's very early on in the Shir Associates where a woman has an essay about this. And Rabbi Shachter makes this point also in Eretz HaTzvi, in Siman Gimel, in his Pinterest on Brachas, that basically, normally, when I have a Suffolk mitzvah, so I really have two Sfeikas. Because basically, I have the mitzvah to perform, and I have a mitzvah d'Rabbanan to make a bracha on this mitzvah. And that mitzvah d'Rabbanan is clearly separate from the mitzvah, because if I don't make the bracha, I still am yotzei the mitzvah. So I have a mitzvah to do perform, and I have a mitzvah d'Rabbanan to make a bracha on the occasion of that mitzvah. So I have a safek whether or not I have to do the mitzvah, and it's a mitzvah d'Raisa, so sveka d'Raisa l'chom. And then the mitzvah d'Rabbanan to make the bracha is a sveka d'Rabbanan, so it's l'kul. But when it comes to Kriya Shema, if we understand that Berachas Kriya Shema is not really a Berachas HaMitzvah, but basically that's now how we do Kriya Shema Midrabanan, we do it with Seder HaBrachos, so then it's not that we have these two separate Sfeikas. The question is, I have an obligation to say Kriya Shema. It's a Suffolk whether I'm Chayiv, so apparently I have to assume I am Chayiv, because we assume again this is Sfeikah D'Raisa L'Chomro. So once we're doing it, so we have to do it right, and doing it right is Al Pi Seder HaBrachos. That's something that Rabbi Shachter points out in the Sefer. But a woman has a whole essay about the many more details about this question, the Pinterest Pnei Yeshua, and a very lumbish distinctions one can make within it. And that seems to also emerge from this idea that one could understand Berachas Kriya Shema as not being a function of a Berachas HaMitzvah, or at least not being exclusively a function of Berachas HaMitzvah, but being something that has these different aspects to it, and as well as being part of how we do Kriya Shema Drabban. Okay, another concept that comes up on Yud Amud Beis is the whole Indian of not doing things before davening, not eating before davening, and not doing things before davening. So there are, and this is also something that Rilik has an essay about here, and it's really in the second parak, but basically there are a number of separate concepts here. Then on the one hand, so there is a din not to eat before doing mitzvahs. And that's a complicated question when that comes into play. Some of the more famous examples are shofar and lulav. The reason it's complicated is because we have to have a situation where we have the zman of the mitzvah clear. And the Rokeach writes that's the explanation for the minig for a chassan and kala to fast, or at least for a chassan to fast on the day of his wedding, that since we assume like the Rambam and the Chinuch that there's a mitzvah to get married, so then on that day, so he's holding by a mitzvah, and therefore he shouldn't be eating before, just like you don't eat before lulav in the morning. That's a question whether or not that's really the hesber. But in general, when I have a situation of a mitzvah, so it's not appropriate to eat before. It's a Mishnah in Sukkah, it's a Mishnah in Shabbos, and Daftes. And that's normally the case. The Pesel HaChachma of Bezalel Stern has a number of tshuvas discussing details of this. For example, he was asked, does eating before Kriyas HaTorah become more chamer on Parsha Zachar? If we assume that Parsha Zachar is a mitzvah in HaTorah, so that day Kriyas HaTorah is a Daraisa, so does it become more chamer to eat them than any other day? So he makes a couple points in this shuvah. First of all, he's not really sure whether there is such a distinction between deraisas and drabbanans. Normally we're machmir on drabbanans also. But the question is that really bazman for Zohar? It happens to be that it's a question in Rishonim. The fact that we read Parsha Zohar before Purim, the Sefer Torah of the Minyan, so the Rash writes that's all Minhat Torah. The Sefer Torah of the Minyan is Minhat Torah. But Rishonim debate that point. And even if you agree with the Rash that that there's a mitzvah in HaTorah to lane Zachar with a minion, the idea that a davka has to be that Shabbos is much less grounded. So to assume that even though we're fulfilling a deraisa that day, it has to be that day, and it doesn't have to, can't be any other time. So that's a question. He quotes from Maram Shik there, who says the Yisod, that if something that he refers to a father giving a milah or a pigeon event to a son, and he says that in both cases there's no iser for the father to eat before the meal or the pigeon aben, because even if he would eat and even if the time would pass, so the same mitzvah is still there. So I didn't get a chance to see the Maram Shik inside, but I think we normally assume that there's really a difference between meal and pigeon aben. because this is something that Rav Nosson Gishtadner points out in a different shuva, that normally, so Pidgin Aben really can be any time after 30 days. Torah says, Mi Ben Chodesh Tipada. And which reason Makdimin, so we do it earlier. But it could be this, it's the same mitzvah on the 45th day as it is on the 30th day, just without its reason. So, fine. So that mitzvah, if it passes, it's not gonna get lost. But Milas Yom HaShmini, that could, in theory, get lost. The Mila on the 9th day is not the same mitzvah as the Mila on the 8th day. So why they're necessarily the same, I'm not totally sure. That I'd have to try to see the Ma'arim Shik inside. But that's basically so that the Tzal Chachma discusses that if the mitzvah is going to be there, it's just going to be later, but it's not going to get lost. So then we don't have the same chashash about eating. And it's only when it comes to a mitzvah that's going to pass, like a lulav, or like davening, or kriyashma, whatever it is, that the mitzvah is not going to be there anymore. That's when there's more of a concern. On the subject of milah, he also discusses, so then what should the status be of the mo'el? Since the mo'el has an incident to eat before the milah, so in a different shuva, he points out, pash does not, because it's not his obligation. If you're doing a mitzvah on behalf of somebody else, so then you don't have a prohibition to worry about losing his mitzvah, so to speak, in that sense. He also throws in the fact that then no one's going to want to take on any shtichus for anybody else, because it's hard enough to do their mitzvahs, but to have to worry about fasting also is... no one's going to take that on, so it's not a Kedai policy anyway. But in general, he assumes that a mitzvah is being done on behalf of somebody else is not going to have a prohibition of achila. But for the most part, mitzvahs have such a concept. So when it comes to davening, so we have this idea also. Now it seems when it comes to shachris, we have a more chamur din. When it comes to shachris, our Gemara basically tells us there's something more here. There's also an issur of loisoichlu al hadam. And so Shaila had to understand that the drasha on the pasuk, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, has a number of other limudim from that pasuk. Probably the case that this is not a drasha d'oraisa, because the Gemara interprets that as far as in the context, for example, there's a number of drashas added, but for example, a Sanhedrin is not supposed to eat the same day they're executing somebody. That's lo sochlu hadam, and the Gemara has a number of other drashas to it. So it's a question whether or not it's even room to assume that this is a din d'oraisa. Besides which, you would have to be assuming, like the Rambam, that there's an obligation of tefillah min ha-Torah. If we're assuming the whole obligation of tefillah is drabanan, so then it's harder to understand how this could be a din min ha-Torah. But if you assume, like the Rambam, like tefillah is daraisa, or some tefillah is daraisa, so then maybe the Gemara is telling you there is a din min ha-Torah here, not to eat before you daven on some level. And that's a question how it relates to the other drushes. It could be, as some understand it, that you do have here what we call a lav shebeklolus, where the Gemara Makkos tells us that if there's a pasuk is interpreted a number of different ways, so that's a lav, but there's no malchus for that. This machlokes is shown whether it means there's no malchus for any of the lavin, or there's no malchus for the additional interpretations that are not the straight reading of the pasuk. But in any case, that's a question whether or not this is considered to be a drasha d'oraisa or not. But this gives more severity to shachris than it does to the other tefillos. Right?
I believe the Rambam says in Perush Mishnayos in Malchus in the third parak that it is. In fact, the
last recalls. Right. The pasuk could be a last recalls anyway because of davening.
He specifically says eating before.
Eating before davening. Right. So the Rambam should tell us that it works fine. Yeah. The question is, according to others, if you don't assume that there's a tefillah, that there's a chiyuv tefillah min ha-Torah, so it's harder to understand. Basically, there's two hurdles to overcome in order to make this a din d'oraisa. Hurdle one is you have to assume tefillah d'oraisa, and hurdle two is how do you deal with the fact that there are other dinim coming out of this pasuk, so is it a lav shebeklolus or is this some kind of an asmach? Hi.
Firstly, lav shebeklolus
is the deraisa. Yeah, lav shebeklolus is the deraisa, but this is no. Right, so I'm saying, is that the case that we're saying lav shebeklolus and it's therefore deraisa, or no? This is not really pshat in the pasuk, and this is an asmach.
More than heaven says that it has a lav shebeklolus, but then gives other five examples, not including this one.
Right.
So it could be that
you say it's a riot, this is not one
of them. The last recall. This one is just like, it must not happen.
Okay, could be. That's all a possibility. But in any case, this creates a more chamer isser for shachris, and Rabbi Willig in this piece in Siman Yud goes through all the details of what the nature of this isser is and how that plays out. According to some Rishonim, our concern is really that we're not going to forget about davening, which we mentioned a few days ago when we talked about greeting people before davening. And in those cases, sometimes the hecker helps. Sometimes having somebody else remind you helps. But there might be something else here also. Rabbi Willig also discusses, and if you take a look, he also discusses the various heterim found in Poskim for eating something that's necessary for the davening itself. But if you're not going to be able to daven without eating certain things, so then it's not that you're trying to attend to your need before davening, it's that that's part of davening. But he does mention that it comes out in the Mishnah Berurah that it's still better to daven be yichidus rather than avail yourself of such a heter. So the question is, would only be matter things that you can't even daven be yichidus without? So he says those things are hard to imagine, with the exception that I think we all relate to. Davar ze'enu matzoi chutz mimisha zokok l'kafim. Right, so what scenario do you have where somebody can't even daven b'yichidus without even drinking? So we're talking about people who need the caffeine in the morning. I think many of us can relate to that. So there's a case where you probably even can't hold cup b'yichidus until you drink something. So that may, or if that's the way you are, so that's a different story. So water might be nothing, but that's not so clear. So you'll see it goes through a lot of the pratim here. But as far as this, because it would seem if you view this as an absolute iser, as an iser min haTorah, so that would seem to aser even water, which is what it sounds like from the Rambam. And that doesn't really seem to be our practice.
Well, can the Rambam, would you be machalik maybe before and after Modanim?
Sorry?
But the Rambam pass would be mechalik to be before and after Modani.
You mean it could be that once you say Modani, so you're mechayim tefillah on some level and so longer.
There is.
Could be. But if you take a look, so we really had a discussion here about that water thing. It sounds like from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that even water would be a problem. And the Prima Gadim says not that way. There's a whole discussion over here.
Isn't the whole thing that you have to put the sugar cube between your teeth?
Well, sugar, right? So sugar is a different issue because sugar gets involved with gaiva. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that here in this drasha it says leisaychul adam, and then the Gemara brings also this other pasuk. So the Rav in his Yartzei Shirim and a piece on Kiddush, so he explains what the interplay is between these concepts, and it happens to fit into a larger vort that he has about Kiddush as a whole. And about Berachas Hananin, but basically he explains that this Gemara is of a piece with those concepts. So what does he mean? That what's the idea of Leisaychlu al Adam as the Gemara is understanding it here? That the idea is that for you to think that you don't need to acknowledge Ribbono Shalom before you go about your day, so that's a certain feeling of independence from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is in itself gaiva. That's what this Gemara then quotes. The other Gemara explains the idea by quoting this other pasuk that you're throwing me after your gaiva. Where's the gaiva here? What's the gaiva about eating? The gaiva about eating is that you think that you don't have to acknowledge any other creator of the world before taking care of your own needs. So it becomes mutter to take care of your needs by first acknowledging the Ribbono Shel Olam. In which case, this is not only an inyan of forgetting to daven, but it's the whole idea of eating is taking care of your own needs before you take care of. Before you acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is an act of gaiva. And he has this in his essay on Kiddush, because that's how he understands in general. You know, we have an Isser to eat before Kiddush. And the Poskim discuss how this Isser really plays out in a way. The Magen Avraham has a plea on this, and there's a long Tshuva about this in the Tshuva of Dvar Yehoshua. That the Isser by Kiddush is treated in a much more chamer way than we would normally assume prohibitions of not eating before mitzvahs are normally played out. And the Rav explains that the idea of Kiddush is that it's basically similar to Berachas Hananin. That the Gemara says that to eat without a bracha is considered to be a type of gzela. That basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a deal with you. Right? The pasuk Gemara asks on two psukim that Shemayim, Shemayim, Lashem, Varas, Naslam, Ve'adam. That the land is given to human beings. But on the other hand, the pasuk says, Lashem, Ha'aretz, Umalawa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has possession of the land. So the Gemara says, Kan Kodam Bracha, Kan Malacha Bracha. Basically, once you acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu through a bracha, and you say that I recognize that there is a creator, so then it's shayach to me nene from this world. So Shabbos, the Rav explained, is the same idea, that basically, what's my heter to be involved in this world, and to do malacha in the world, and to sheish Hashem tavod, all of that, what's the heter? The heter is that you take out one out of 7 days, and you acknowledge that there is a creator. And that's what makes all the other days mutter. So Kiddush, the idea is that when we are so machmir on eating before Kiddush, is that Kiddush itself has a role like a Birchas Hanenu, that basically we make a Bari Pri HaGafen as part of Kiddush, and according to many Rishonim, it seems to be that's part of Kiddush itself, not just the Bracha Makos, but that's a way of showing that there's a Creator, and that's what enables us to work the rest of the week. And that's the theme of Kiddush and of Berachos Hananen. Therefore, Berachos Hananen and Kiddush are grafted together, where prayer often becomes part of Kiddush. So too, that's what the Gemara is telling us here, that a matir for us to go about our day and doing our basic needs is through first acknowledging and encouraging Baruch Hu's creation, and then only then can we move forward. So to take care of your chafatzim, so to speak, anyway, Shitas Rashi and Afei is actually, it's not even allowed to, you're not even allowed to learn before Shacharis. That seems to be a function more of forgetting to daven rather than other things, and that's how Poskim treat it. Yes, this is my focus, Rashi and Tosfos. But so when that's the concern, that's one thing. But there's this additional concern of not taking care of your own chafatzim, taking care of your own needs before davening. And then the shaila becomes, in individual cases, like eating for the sake of davening. So then can that action be redefined from chafatzecha to chafzei shamayim? And that's basically the underlying discussion in Poskim. So again, for a more detailed discussion on two of our topics today, look in the Amorichai, or Kol Kent Morasha. And I think that's basically it for today. So for tomorrow, so topics in Daf Yud Aleph are on the agenda. So there are a number of topics to discuss. Some of which are things that we've discussed before. So we'll probably skip over those. But basically for tomorrow, please be holding on Daf Yud Aleph.